Well, thanks for that warm reception. I've been coming since 1975. We have to stop meeting like this. So. And at that time, well, in 1975, I met Jim Gashel near DuPont Circle, and he introduced me to Dr. Jernigan, who I was really one of the most inspirational meetings I've had in my life. And I came to this first convention, and I met Dr. Maurer, except he wasn't Dr. Maurer then. He was an undergraduate, but already showing signs of leadership. He was president of the student division. And I said, there's something about this man. I have to keep an eye on him. And my business partner and I sort of regard anybody who's younger than us as a kid and anybody who's older than us as a grown-up. And I've noticed there's fewer and fewer grown-ups in the world, fewer and fewer coming to this convention. I think, Jim, you might be a grown-up. I don't know. But not by appearance, though. The idea that Dr. Jernigan introduced me to, and one that I discovered was of enormous effectiveness, is that if you're going to make an invention, the people you should collaborate with and create the invention with are the users of that invention. And that's especially true for something like blindness, which is a condition that people who live it will know the subtleties and the requirements, and there are far too many well-meaning inventors who decide, you know, based on a superficial understanding of blindness, what blind people really need. And you know, I really hadn't internalized this myself until I really experienced it. But we had 8 blind engineers and scientists work with us on the Kurzweil reading machine, including Michael Hinkson. And I really do attribute the success of that technology and product to my involvement with the National Federation and the guidance by people who really understand what blindness is all about. And this has been a 35-year effort. I've stayed continuously involved with reading technology for the blind and expanded it somewhat to other reading disabilities, such as dyslexia. It turns out, actually, almost everybody has some reading disability. But been working on this with the National Federation of the Blind now for 35 years, and recently we started a company together to pursue this further. Let me take a little detour and share some thoughts with you, because almost I'm involved in some different things, like Dr. Maurer mentioned, writing books, and right now I'm writing a book on the brain. It's called How the Mind Works and How to Build One. And pretty much everything I do makes me think of the National Federation of the Blind for some reason. So as I'm studying the brain and how it works, it makes me think of some dialogues and debates that have occurred here at this convention. You know, is there something different about the brain of a blind person? And people will say, oh, well, a blind person is, you know, inherently has a much better capability of hearing or touch. And you might wonder how that, and even though it's attributing a better quality to blind people, there's still something questionable about it, because it's attributing a difference, which doesn't really make sense when generally blindness is an acquired trait. Even if it's acquired before birth, we would expect the brain to be the same. But there's actually an interesting insight that I've had regarding how the brain works and how it would respond to something like blindness, even if it's acquired later in life. The heart of the brain is the cortex. That's where we do our thinking. And the cortex works, it has a billion little pattern recognizers, a billion little modules, and each one of them can recognize a pattern. And there's something called the visual cortex, where presumably visual information is processed and recognized. But it really turns out there's actually no such thing as the visual cortex. There is just the cortex. It is the part of the brain where we do our thinking. And it has these billion little recognizers that can recognize patterns. So if someone is sighted, some of those will recognize, for example, the crossbar and a capital A. If someone can hear, some of them will recognize different vowel sounds like E or ah. And those feed up to other recognizers that recognize then a word, whether it's spoken or seen visually. And those feed up to higher levels because they're organized in hierarchies. So at a higher level, it'll recognize an idea. And at the very highest level, there's little pattern recognizers that recognize things like humor or irony and decide, oh, that was funny. And you might think that those high-level pattern recognizers are much more complicated and subtle than the lower-level ones that recognize, let's say, an E vowel. It turns out they're actually the same. They just exist at different levels of this conceptual hierarchy. And there's actually no such thing as the visual cortex. I mean, if someone has sight, the optic nerve feeds into a portion of the cortex, and that part of the cortex will process visual information because it's there. But if there's no visual information or limited visual information coming in, then the cortex is self-organizing, and more of it will be devoted to other patterns. So it may very well be, particularly if someone, say, learns Braille, that they will have more of their cortex devoted to recognizing Braille, and therefore more of it's devoted to tactile information. Maybe more of it's devoted to recognizing humor. So you could say that blind people have a better sense of humor. But we all have the same brain. We all take advantage of the information we have. We all have actually a lot more information flowing into us, regardless of what senses we have and their state, than we can possibly process. And this then segues into, you know, my 35-year interest in reading machines, because our strategy in sensory aids for the blind has been to convert visual information into another form, into Braille or into spoken form. And so when I came to see Jim Gashel, I had a machine that could convert printed material into spoken words. It really wasn't a fully baked technology till we went through this whole process of having blind people actually use it and make it a usable tool. Which with the help of the National Federation of the Blind, we did. Another idea that I've been involved in is I call the law of accelerating returns, which is basically an exponential growth of the power of information technology. And so we can see that very clearly in the history of reading machines. The first reading machine was $50,000. It was about the size of this podium. It could do one thing with errors, a fairly high error rate, although it was usable. And today it exists in a cell phone for a tiny fraction of the cost and reads 16 languages and does a lot of other things. And since it's a cell phone, it does, I think, a million different things according to the latest commercials. And that's a good example of the law of accelerating returns. About 5 or 6 years ago, the National Federation of the Blind and my company, Kurzweil Technologies, joined forces and created KNFB reading technology. K is... Thank you. K is for me, and NFB is for National Federation of the Blind, and our goal was to create an actual portable reading machine you could put in your pocket. And we did then, a few years later, create the first model, and you needed a pretty big pocket, but if you had a big pocket, you could put it in there. And it pretty much did one thing, because it wasn't a cell phone. Later on, we were able to get it to run on a variety of cell phones, read 16 languages, translate from one language to another, and it continued to come down in cost and increase in effectiveness. More recently, we've developed another alliance, a partnership with Baker & Taylor, the world's largest book distributor, and you will hear from Bob Nelson, who heads up the digital division of Baker & Taylor in a few moments, and to create basically a reading system that has no cost and no size at all, assuming you have an electronic device, which almost everybody has, and we do now have this product called Blio, which you may have heard of, running on different platforms. So the goal is to basically run on anything you might have. And in a few moments, Jim Gashel will give you a demonstration of it running on a couple of different platforms. And this is an e-reader, so you don't actually have to even scan the material from a print book. We still have the pocket-sized reading machine and a cell phone that allows access to printed material. But increasingly, material now is becoming available electronically. And Amazon, for example, is selling more books electronically, more e-books, than they are print books. And the world's rapidly going in that direction, and everything is becoming digitized. So Blio is free. It runs on multiple platforms. It comes with 3 million free books. Once you get done with those 3 million free books, you can actually buy a book. So there's some books like Harry Potter or the latest bestsellers where you have to pay. We have over 100,000 for pay books. And we've had a very high priority on making it fully accessible, which goes substantially beyond just having it run with a screen reader, and Jim will explain that to you, but this has been a major process to actually make it fully accessible in a deep way, so that all of the features are readily apparent, and that all the different reading, all the different things you want to do in reading, such as skimming material or browsing the table of contents, can be done easily. And Jim will take you through that, but this has been a major commitment. Baker & Taylor, as I mentioned, is the world's largest book distributor. They have relationships with 44,000 publishers, and so they are getting all this material for this project. And this we see as the wave of the future, because everything is becoming electronic. And so Blio will run on all of your devices, and you can buy books on or download them on one device and then access them on another. All the information is kept in the cloud. And we have really built in the ability to access the information through multiple means, including speech, as an integral part of the product. And it's really the only reader that does that. So I'll let Jim give you a demonstration of the product, but this is the latest sort of installment of the collaboration I've had with this organization for now 35 years, and it's really been the most rewarding project in my life, which is why I continue to work on it. And I continue to extol the virtues of working with the intended users of a technology, because it is really only the users who will understand the subtleties of what works and what doesn't work. And most technology projects fail, I think, because they fail to take this particular lesson to heart. So it's also been a personally rewarding relationship. My dearest friends are in this organization, And I look forward to many more decades of collaboration in the future. Thank you.